Welcome to the Sweet Tea and Strategy Podcast, produced by Ackerman Marketing and PR. We're speaking with business leaders about challenges in the industry and communication strategies to take on those challenges. We're going to talk cold beverages as well. So my name is Tommy Smith, Vice President at Ackerman. Today we'll be talking with cybersecurity with the CEO of the industry's newest company, Averdium. Jeff Schmidt is the new CEO of Averdium. He's here today with us on the podcast. Jeff, welcome.
Thanks, Tommy. Good to be here.
So we're in the South, and so we're the frame of the podcast, the name of the podcast is Sweet Tea and Strategy. So where do you stand on this classic Southern drink? Do you have a different favorite?
We're all in on sweet tea.
We're
all in sweet tea. So when we moved here, that became the favorite of the household. So.
All right. And who makes it in the house? Or you only buy it from
we're the Chick-fil-A family, so to Chick-fil-A, sweet tea, and we're good to go.
Okay, all right. So in Atlanta, that makes total sense, yeah. So Averdium's a brand-new company, but the businesses that join forces through the new company have a long history in cybersecurity. So tell our listeners about Averdium, and maybe those may be unfamiliar with some of the companies.
Yeah, so the name Averdium comes from avert, and then a play on the periodic table. So Averdium, think potassium, calcium, we're the new cyber element. People, process, policies. So if you really want to attack good security, you should be attacking it really from the fundamental of what the framework is before you start to apply tools and automation to it.
Okay.
And so those are really the five elements that we deliver. Averdium was made up of three companies to date. So TruShield out of Virginia, Sword and Shield here in Knoxville, and Terra Verde in Phoenix, Arizona. Three very similar companies providing managed security services. So right. SOC as a service, as a lot of cyber people may know it, delivering compliance, HIPAA, PCI, helping companies really build the framework for the next generation of what compliance is going to be, as well as things that are there today. And then pen testers that are out there, white hat hackers doing the same thing maybe the evil guys are doing, but doing it for good.
Yeah.
And then we've got virtual CISOs that are helping out as well. So a lot of small businesses are struggling with things like staffing or maybe direction. Where do I go? Mm-hmm. How much money should I be putting in this? So being able to provide those services as well. So we got the benefit of three companies. The oldest company, 22 years here in Knoxville, which was Sword and Shield, and the other two with 10 plus in the industry as well. So we can call ourselves a 42-year-old company.
Fair enough.
22 or 10-year-old, or we're a 6-month-old. Right. So, but we can play on those as well.
So, what industries are you all in? I know that you're in healthcare, government, and probably a broad array. Talk about some of those industries.
So hospitality, fairly large for us. Retail, big issue with PCI in the retail space, and small businesses as well as the large businesses are all targets. Fintech, from a financial perspective, manufacturing. I mean, we're kind of agnostic to what we're doing because the problem when you talk cybersecurity typically is the same. There's compliance. There's the crown jewels of the organization that you don't want to get out, or you've got customer information you don't want out.
Right.
So that approach, but hospitality tends to be one that's moving fairly quick for us. Retail, and then the smaller financial industry, so credit unions, community banks that are looking for help and assistance.
So there's a lot of regulation around, when you think of healthcare, government, banking. Hospitality maybe a little less so. Talk about what themes are kind of bubbling up for hospitality.
So if you think about, there's been a couple of major breaches in the hospitality industry. Hilton was one. So they were exposed a customer data. And so I think the numbers were, they're fine with somewhere around, I think it was 700,000 records that were taken. I may be off on that. That might be the fine. But if they were actually applied to GDPR, which is the Privacy Act for EU.
Yep.
That potentially would have taken out their profits for an entire year. And so
that's motivating.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a lot of core data that's sitting in these environments, right? So hackers aren't just trying to steal dollars. They're trying to steal valuable assets. So social security numbers, driver's license, credit cards. So you've seen the article, the advertisements on TV, right? As your data is everywhere, sometimes not where you want it to be.
Right.
So helping companies really kind of understand what that is and being able to provide that defense to them.
You mentioned GDPR. Explain for our listeners what that is and also kind of the challenges associated with operationalizing that in an institution?
So it's how information is collected in Europe and what you have to do to protect that information. So the compliance wrapped around it is protecting information, being able to opt out. So if you think about companies that have your information today, you have the ability in Europe, if you're part of that EU union, to be able to say, I don't want you to collect my data anymore. I want you to erase it.
Yeah.
And so, and if you're in the US, you don't necessarily have that same right today.
Right.
I was playing around on the internet and just wanted to see how many companies I could actually find out like what their process was to erase me from their databases. And the number of things that came back with like, do you live in Europe? Do you have a residency in Europe?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pieces that are wrapped around that. And the intention is that you can't just collect data on me unwillingly without me accepting what it is.
Right.
Many of us in the U.S. now see it where you're going to a website and it says this website collects cookies. And there isn't like, do you accept it or do you not accept it? It's like, there's an X.
Right.
Confirm that you know it.
Yeah.
But that's the result of GDPR.
Okay.
And so that's now spilling over into the U.S., which is, you know, California Privacy Act. Texas is moving in that direction. I think it's somewhere now around 7 to 8 states that are starting to move in this direction. The scary part is if we end up with a state-based privacy acts, how do you as a company deal with 50 different acts that are out there? So we need to have in the U.S. is a federal-based privacy act and what we're doing. Concerns over California, I think it was developed in 2 weeks.
Wow.
It was... You know, almost like building a company on a cocktail napkin. So
right.
It takes time to think through the impact. And to any company falls into this, they're all in the arena now. So much like Dodd-Frank to the smaller banks, larger banks could deal with it. I have massive amounts of people, can go figure out Dodd-Frank, figure out how to go make it work.
Right.
But the banks that suffered were the smaller community banks, credit unions that are trying to figure out how to go do it. So having that ability for fractional services makes a huge difference. Like I can bring in an expert at a fractional cost. I don't have to be B of A to go do this.
Okay.
So I can leverage an Averdium that has knowledge capabilities to go do that.
We mentioned, I think of GDPR having the effect right now on the U.S. slowly over time, the same way kind of Medicare kind of leads all healthcare big changes. And so that's happening slowly. What is the status of federal regulation associated with privacy similar to GDPR in Europe?
So the CCPA, which is the California Act around privacy, it's still not federal at this point. Yeah, you know, I have some concerns is that our leaders, unfortunately, in government for all intents and purposes, a lot of them lack the technical knowledge living into this technical age that we're in, and what that really means. So we need to think about separating out what's happening in government political factor to the technology aspect, and there are some people who do get that, but these are things that have to happen quickly in our environment. This can't take, you mentioned Medicare, healthcare is this span. The longer that this spans, the longer that the gap is, and we as individuals are under fire every single day. That people are holding our data, and that data that they hold is either done with or without our consent.
Yeah,
and so we're in probably millions of databases at this point in time, depending on how much you're out on the internet of, collecting your information and how it gets used and what it gets used for.
Are there certain industries where you see businesses changing the way they deliver service to customers based on what they've learned from cyber threats? So you mentioned some of the cookies and acceptance of terms, or some of those are more obvious. You know, Facebook's always in the news in terms of what you're kind of approving them to accept and how what they're doing with that data. But are there other industries that maybe aren't so familiar to folks that businesses are having to tangibly change how they serve their customers as a result of cyber threats?
So I'd start with, I think we made a mistake in security early on, which is it became this kind of smoke and mirrors, covert operation that we're doing to protect companies. And in fact, John Chambers of Cisco said, look, if the Internet of Things takes the same route as the Internet has around security, it'll die before it ever takes hold. And so you're talking trillions of devices that are out there today that don't have controls on them that are being put in the hands of people who don't know about securing passwords, other things. So flip that back is we need to take a step back and really look at the problem. And what we tend to be doing right now is applying to the symptoms of the problem.
Right.
And so we're chasing and, you know, attend RSA conference in San Francisco and look at the massive amounts of security companies that are going to solve the problem that happened this year. So 4 years ago, data leakage protection. This year, it's, you know, AI and machine learning is going to solve all of our problems. A pragmatic approach of really thinking about is, you know, what in my business is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody had it, what's the value that I can assign to that? And what's the chance of somebody being able to get to it? And if you start with those three questions, you can start to build a program around it. While we're all focusing on security,
mm-hmm.
we're not necessarily focusing on business continuity and disaster recovery.
Right.
So it's great that we've been talking about people not breaking into our network, but now ransomware is picked up. So, and that's a business continuity. That's a disaster recovery. Backups and control, right? So that step back and where I look at chief security officers that are out there today, risk managers that are out there, the ones who can pull back and say, let's take a step back for a second and let's go look at what we have to defend today without deterring our customers and deterring the growth of our business.
All right. We are, Ackerman's part of a global network of PR firms that specialize in cybersecurity. And so we talk with a lot of folks like you in this industry. And so one of the things I always hear is you can gauge the maturity of a business as it relates to their cybersecurity kind of IQ by how much security is thought of at the strategic planning level of whatever project's coming down the pipe. What does it look like when a company takes cybersecurity extremely serious, embeds it in their culture at every level?
That's a great question. So my vision of that and the companies that are doing it today would typically start board level. It's a board level discussion that then flows to the executive suite and the leadership teams in these organizations. And it's muscle. It becomes muscle memory, right? You're thinking about it. It's part of the daily efforts that we do. So similar to a conversation about, you know, how we operate in our daily lives is we do think about safety when we're driving. We think about safety when we cross the street. So starting to embed that in. The piece that becomes important too, though, is a culture of understanding that we're going to mess up sometimes. I may click a link in an email, and you want to create an environment that is, say something. Don't just bury it away.
Right.
Because if you bury it away, then I don't want to be fearful that I'm going to get fired because I accidentally clicked a link. We're helpful people when you see something and then all of a sudden you'd like the blood flows out of your head and goes down to your toes. And you're like, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Say something. And the organization has said, like, you know what? We know this happens sometimes. You're not getting fired, but thank you for telling us. We'll go fix it and remediate it versus I didn't know.
So that looks like maybe quarterly or monthly, you know, tests within the organization and reports that show, you know, employee response to that test and making sure training's wrapped on to the end of that or followed on to that.
Yeah, training, absolutely, ongoing, all the time. So it's just, it's just feeding it through. So, you know, I was sitting in a healthcare facility, unfortunately, but I was looking across the room and I'm looking at a monitor, and across the monitor that's sitting with a machine attached to it is this flowing screen about passwords and lock your computer and go do these things.
Huh.
So we have a lot of visual ways to kind of push that out. So test, train, but use it as education.
Yeah.
Don't use it as a stick. Use it as the carrot. Find people who have it. Find sponsors in different areas that can kind of help with, hey, look, if I have a question, what's going on? Not everybody is as proficient. And some people are going to be like, oh my gosh, it's a scary stuff. I don't get it. So, but yeah, I think the program, to get it to muscle memory, to work out every single day, you have to have something motivating you and something challenging you. And so you want to build that into your culture of the health of your culture.
Okay. So let's talk about response. We're in the communications business. And so where we get called in is probably a lot of times where you get called in is after something's happened. And so where have you seen businesses respond poorly or really well to from a communication standpoint, and how do you advise them after a breach has happened?
I don't think I can point out any company as like, hey, this is the echelon of great communication and what's happening, because there's such a quick response to wanting to tell people what the problem is, how big it is. Mm-hmm. The typical process is, if you look at what happened in the credit bureau area, it's this many million records. So then 3 weeks later, it's, oh, no, we're wrong. It's actually double that many records. Right. And then pretty soon it's 300 million records. Yahoo went through the same thing.
And behind the scenes, what's going on as those, for example, from your standpoint?
Right. So people are digging through data, information, and what happened, how many systems were exposed. So, I mean, it's a maze, right? So how do I put the puzzle pieces together? There's certain compliance that says by this time I have to get out reports and I have to tell people what the exposure is. I keep peeling back the onion. It's like, oh, that's not the only server that had something on it. This other one had it over here. There was outbound information going out, so there's a bunch of credit card. It's kind of Pandora's box. Mm-hmm. And so the expectation is you can give this information and respond, but how long have they been inside the network? How much information? Where are the fingerprints? Where is that? And that's this whole forensic process that you have to go through. So it's important to respond. I'm not sure that the industry has it right that you have to start giving numbers right away.
Yeah.
Because in my opinion, if I'm giving a number and it's wrong, and my typical line is, it's like, give it another 2 weeks before they get closer to the right number.
Right.
You know, Yahoo took how long? 2 years before they got to even a close number?
You start to lose a little bit of credibility when you get out above your skis.
Yeah. And I think it's also, I think, unfortunately, is think about the team that's on the inside and the pressure that's coming down.
Yeah.
So I think we have to look at what we're asking and where it comes from and how to get there. All these companies have smart, intelligent people. They're not stupid.
Mm-hmm.
They happen to be part of this breach that happened somewhere along the lines, and now they're trying to debug what that is. And it takes time. And so in the search for information, board meetings, quarterly reports, whatever it is I'm pressuring people to give me information without getting all the facts.
Right.
You know, we wouldn't go to a doctor and be like, hey,
hurry.
You know, hey, there's something wrong with you. I don't know. Start with, you know, let's just start dissecting me and figuring out what this is.
Right.
You take time to research, to get information, come up with a prescriptive process in what you do. So I think there's some opportunity to be better at it. And so the good or bad, the organizations that are responding, I think are doing the best they can with the tools and the systems that they have.
So you have you kind of have one wish that you wish the industry would kind of move towards. And industry is a big term, but whether it be regulations associated with the industry or technology that your firm's pursuing that you don't have now, where's a magic wand? You know, what would you kind of lay over?
Shut off the internet?
Shut off the internet. Fair enough. All right. Pen and paper.
So there's two things. One is, security isn't as spooky as everybody thinks it is. And I've been preaching this now for 20 years. Whatever you do in your physical life to protect yourself, whether it be how you protect your valuables at home, your family,
mm-hmm.
you know, these things are really important. Do the same thing in business. What's most important? Break it down to just a very pragmatic approach. Start with that. And like, hey, if somebody got this, I wouldn't be happy about it, but it's not the end of the world.
Right.
So I think that's one. And so I think it's just starting with that pragmatic approach of just getting a security policy. The number of companies I walk into pre-coming here in my past jobs, and somebody's like, oh, we're servicing, you know, Fortune 500 companies. You're like, do you have a security policy? No. You know, are you sharing passwords? Yes. What are you sharing? What are you sharing, man? Well, we're storing, you know, they're saving them to Chrome browser, and it's like, you're doing hundreds of millions of dollars of business, but you're still operating as a small business because we don't want to do security because it's going to slow us down. You have to stop. Nobody would go drive a car without brakes. And so sometimes you have to go slower to go faster. And the problem is we've said, you have to have the Maserati of security. No, you just have to have a basic framework. My wish would be is that we're building security into the fabric and the framework that we're moving forward with. And we have to get ahead of the next generation. So part of fixing today has to be is starting to look at what next is and thinking about how we protect next and actually building this into the fabric and the framework of what we're doing so that people don't think about it. And I use this terminology as, if I told you had to pay an extra $5,000 when you bought a car to put airbags in, you'd probably opt out.
Right.
If I said, you know, seat belts were another $5,000, well, I just need the driver's seat belt because nobody's in my car typically. Whatever it is, right? But we make decisions based on cost.
Right.
But if it's all built in, we're not thinking about, hey, that airbag probably costs $5,000 to stick inside the car.
Yeah.
You know what the cost is when you have to replace it.
Right. Right.
Right. But built in takes the cost aspect out of it and says, look, it just has to be smart. Le Mans Racing was one of the guys said, look, Le Mans Racing is probably one of the most unsafe sports you can do. But the security controls that they've built into the car to make it work the way that it's supposed to makes it also one of the most safest sports today that exists. And so, and they go through the statistics. That same thing that we're moving towards is just what are the 3 to 5 things you have to go do to be smart about it and make that fit into a budget that you can actually work with.
Thinking of things that are next, talking about the Internet of Things, as we put AI and the power of the Internet in new places, where are you a little concerned that maybe innovation is moving a little faster than security? Or it's quite innovative as a security industry. We don't really have our head around how to control this a little bit.
So somebody said this to me a while back, and it was like everything that can be used for good can be used for evil. Right. So best intentions. The hard part is actually understanding it. So the other day, somebody was showing me an AI hack that took a turtle and made it look and actually fed back in the system that the turtle was a machine gun. I'm like, no, I'm looking at a turtle. Visually, I can see a turtle here. But the AI system is saying, no, it's a machine gun because somebody's hacked the system and figured out how to do that. So if you take that a step further and you say, well, to your comment on driving autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
What if I can actually change what it is? We're still talking ones and zeros, right? So we always think in three dimensional, at least. The world that we live in computers, ones and zeros. So it's just rearranging the ones and zeros to be something different. And so I'm worried that we're moving so fast, and IoT is one of those areas that I think is extremely dangerous because we're booting up computers that are pretty smart and pretty fast.
Right.
That can be used. We saw the Mariah virus, the malware that came out. You know, botnets have always been a big concern of security people. So the ability to do command and control, I mean, it's transformers to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So if you have all these computers that have horsepower all over the place and you can go drop stuff on it that can't be detected because we as individuals, as consumers, aren't managing this. I don't know what my camera's doing when I'm offline. Watch your phone at night. Look at how much activity on your phone is happening when you're not around it. We don't pay attention to it. So there's a little bit of, from my standpoint, without being overly paranoid,
right? Yeah.
But we're deploying these assets all over the place that while they're used for good, they have a high value asset to somebody who wants to do something bad.
Thinking of communications as it relates to organizational strategy, unification, you're leading this new organization that was formerly three. Talk about how you think about communicating the vision of this new company to a larger employee base, and everybody's new to one another in a certain sense.
we were at dinner last night having this conversation about, you know, as we're all kind of learning how to work with one another, is to make our customers' world safer, and that's our mission. And if you take the world that we're in, there's a passion with our team members. We want a team that's passionate about cybersecurity. And we live and breathe this. When we go home, we're thinking about it. You know, it's just kind of part of the DNA. And it takes a special person. We want a team not full of ego, but people who are passionate about solving our customers' problems. We want to be the choice of our customers when they want to accept anything less. There's a little bit of a lesson more there, like what does that really mean?
Mm-hmm.
But we want to be the de facto standard. Is if I want the pragmatic approach to security without being scared to death, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but I want to talk about pragmatically is how do I go do something that's right, come to us. If you're in that mid-market space and you're trying to figure out, it's like, hey, how do I go create a security program? Or what should I be doing differently in my security program? That we apply a reasonable approach and we're looking to help you, not to just make money off of you. Our goal is to make that world safer. And hopefully we can influence the community. We can influence what goes back in. We talk about government.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see us at some point as an organization is influencing the way that the U.S. works, the way that we apply security policies, is that we're establishing market leaders in cybersecurity that can take this forward to the next level. That 10 years from now, it's we didn't see Averdium coming, but look at the people that they have that are influencing the way that we work, live on a national level, that they're influencing the way that senators, our representatives, our government, local, what we go do. We're influencing, you know, schools, community, and how they think about cybersecurity. But again, is without the glaze over on the eyes, like mm-hmm. like this is really scary stuff. Mm-hmm. To yeah, this seems pretty simple. You know, look both ways.
Yeah, this can be as helpful as much as it can be scary.
Yeah, and we have a. I haven't been in an organization in my past where you take three companies, throw them in a blender, and just expect everything to be okay.
Right.
But we have a phenomenal team all the way around who the general question, any, the question behind every question is how do we go make our company great? How do we go get this to the next level? How do we go do the next big thing in what we're doing? And how do we make sure we're helping our customers? We want to win, but we want to win for our customers. And so I don't have the egos of like, hey, my business did it this way or my customer right. wants it. It's very much about let's go make the world better and let's go figure out how we apply ourselves to that and let's get more people here that have the same passion.
That sounds like a great challenge to wake up and try to tackle every day.
I love it.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed sometimes when Friday rolls around and I'm excited when Monday comes in. So sometimes that pushes me through Saturday and Sunday to keep doing things. But
fair enough. When you care about something enough, that's what it does.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it. Good luck with that challenge.
Thanks.
With Averdium and the vision you're trying to cast. So congrats.
We're excited. Thank you. Thanks for your time.
Sure. Well, that's the future of cybersecurity. Thanks for listening to the podcast. To listen to more Sweet Tea and Strategy about communications and business strategy, visit thinkackerman.com. Thank you.